Well, good morning to each one of you. Very grateful to be here. Thankful that we can have an opportunity and the freedom to meet and to worship together. Believe it's a worthy cause. It's something that we want to be able to put ourselves in a place where the Lord can keep us, as the song that we sang earlier. I want to be in a place where the Lord can keep me from harm, keep me from danger, keep me from temptation. My experience is that if we allow ourselves to drift away from God's presence, temptation becomes irresistible, and the susceptibility of us to fail in our walk with the Lord, the more we get on the enemy's turf, the more possible, or the more probable it is that we're going to disappoint ourselves and disappoint the Lord. I've been studying and reading this week in Galatians, the fourth chapter. Galatians is something that it's addressed in the first chapter in the first verse. It says, Paul, an apostle, not of men, neither by man, but by Jesus Christ and God the Father, who raised him from the dead. Anyway, it appears that Paul wrote this from Rome on one of his missionary trips or journeys. It wasn't written from Rome when he was a prisoner, like some other books that we have in the New Testament, but it was written when he was still very much able and capable to go about being an apostle, spreading the gospel. And he wrote to the Galatians. The Galatians is a, Galatia is a region or a territory, more like we would say the southwest of the United States, or the northeast, or something like that. If we say the New England states of our United States, then you all know that we're not talking about Washington, Oregon, and California, right? Okay, we know we're talking about those little states up there around Washington, D.C. That's New England. So Galatia was a region that encompassed places like Ephesus, Colossae, other places that was in that region of the country. So he wrote, it wasn't to a city, it wasn't to a congregation, it wasn't to an individual, but he wrote to a region. And this is something that, to me, and just that because it was written to that perspective, it's written to a broader group. That's the point that I want us to make here. So in Galatians chapter 4, I'm going to read beginning the first seven verses. He says, now I say that the heir, as long as he is a child, differeth nothing from a servant, though he be Lord of all, but is under tutors and governors until the time appointed of the Father. Even so we, when we were children, were in bondage under the elements of the world. But when the fullness of time was come, God sent forth his Son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. And because ye are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit of his Son into your hearts, crying, Abba, Father. So, maybe one more verse. Wherefore, thou art no more a servant, but a son. And if a son, then an heir of God through Christ. Okay, so Galatians was written to a broad group of people, a region called Galatia. The message this morning is kind of a broad message for us to have a grasp or an understanding. Just like if I say the southwest of the United States, I would venture that all of us would agree that Texas was part of that. Okay? So we all have to realize that when we talk about a broader subject, that there's a lot of small details that could be included in that. But I want us to be able to look at Christianity, being part of God's church more from a broader perspective. And I want us to really have an understanding of what it means to be a Christian and to be an heir of God. So, in the beginning, in the very first two verses, it talks about an heir being a child. And we've got some little children here today, and none of them, no matter how well they can talk and communicate and have their own little ideas and all of that, none of them have any idea what a bank account is. They don't know what property boundaries are. Their parents might say, don't go over there, that's the neighbor's yard, but they're clueless as to what a property boundary, they just don't know. They don't know that if they have brothers and sisters, they don't know if they're going to lose or if they're going to share inheritance of the property that's there. That's just beyond their scope. It's not in their understanding. So he says here in Galatians chapter 4, in the first verse, he's talking about an heir, as long as he's a child, differeth nothing from a servant, though he be Lord of all. If there was such a situation where there was a servant involved in the household, then their little children would be told the same thing. Don't go over there, that's the neighbor's yard. It wouldn't make a difference whether it was the heir or the servant's child. They would be given the same type of instruction. And honestly, the little children would be clueless as to what why it was important. He goes on to say, but is under the tutors and governors until the time appointed of the father. There's going to come a time that the little children is going to be more mature, and they're going to be aware of what the fence is all about, or what the boundary, or where the boundary line. I know where Rodney and Jessica live, they're part of the property between them and their neighbor has a fence, and part of it don't. The closer it gets to the road, there's no fence there. And Matthew could walk right across the property line and he would be totally unaware. And even as an adult, you would have to take a conscious effort to see, well, that's probably lines up with the fence. I'm probably on the neighbor's side now. There's a lot of reasoning ability there, but there's going to come a time that Matthew will be able, or any of the other children will be able, to understand this is probably the neighbor's, okay? So as we mature, he told this as to give us an illustration here. He told us to try to equip our understanding. So I want, with the help of the Lord, to try to equip our understanding and know where the boundaries are and know where some of the parameters are. He goes on to say in verse 3, this is a verse that I've mulled over quite a bit in my mind. He says, even so we, when we were children, were in bondage under the elements of the world. Now, the margin in my Bible talks about the Jews in the old dispensation were under the tutelage of the law. I don't disagree with that. I think that is for sure included in this. But I also believe that mankind has been subject to the elements of the world since the fall in the beginning. All right? Since the fall in the beginning, there in the garden, when Adam and Eve disobeyed and did what they're not supposed to do and what God had instructed them to stay away from, and they went ahead and did it, they they came under bondage. They came under the bondage of many things, elements of the world. The world got so wicked in a very short amount of time that God made a decision to destroy mankind if it hadn't have been for Noah. And we talked about some of those things last Sunday, of how evil progressed so rapidly. And we have here, it says, even so we, when we were children, were in bondage under the elements of the world. When we come into this world, and as a natural person, and as we start gaining understanding about influences and things that shape us into who we are, we're kind of, we don't know the whys and the wherefores and what's coming behind all of this. And ultimately, we fall into bondage. And there are so many things in this world to bind people, habits, things that's destructive to health, things that's destructive to minds and to relationships. It's all around us. There's lots of bondages that people, there's false theology, there's people that have, you know, one of the most stark things, and I'm not going to try to debate this morning at all, but there are people out there that could get into major arguments about whether the earth is round or flat today. Now, we thought that argument was settled a long time ago, or I did earlier, but there are people out there that take both of those views and will debate them like their life depended on it. There is all kinds of influences and elements of the world that will impact us. So he says here, even so we, when we were children, or without proper understanding, were in bondage under the elements of the world. But when the fullness of time was come, God sent forth his Son, made of a woman, made under the law. There is no doubt in my mind that Paul is talking about Christ coming into this world. And he come into this world under the old law dispensation. His parents followed the commandments of the Old Testament. That's why they kept taking him back to the temple. That's why they offered sacrifices. That's why they did the things that they did when Jesus was a small child. It says here, going on in verse 5, he's talking about Christ now. He says, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. So now we're talking, we're bringing in another concept here, and we're still, remember, we're trying to see the big picture, the overall scope of things. And we were talking about an heir and a child, and we sounds like someone that's born in the house. And here it says, to redeem them that were under the law, or those that were under the bondage of the elements of the world, either one, whichever way you want to look at it, that we might receive the adoption of sons. Now, I want you to know that being born in a house and adoption is two dramatically different things, but the end result is the same. That it's a, you become an heir, all right? I've been told that I can have a child born into my home, to my wife and I, and if I choose to disinherit that child, tell them that, you know, in my will, you get nothing, that's a legally accepted thing. But if I adopt a child, I can't leave them with nothing. All right? That's just a little nuance. I know that it's a process to get a child here, naturally speaking, and it's a process to adopt a child. And I've heard of those that try to unadopt, and that's more difficult than adopting. I've heard of it being done. But I just want us to get the concept here. It says, he came to redeem them that were under the law, that they might receive the adoption of sons. So the people that were living according to the old law could live in a place that was acceptable before God. And I appreciate that. Although their sins were not technically forgiven, they were rolled towards the cross. Okay? They were rolled forward. When they offered sacrifices for their sins, those sins, they weren't guilty of them, but they were anymore, but they were rolled towards the cross. And when Jesus died for all sins, he died for them, all those in the Old Testament, just like he died for mine that's 2,000 years later. Okay? He says, and because ye are sons, what is a son now? A son is an heir. He says, and because ye are sons, God sent forth the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, crying, Abba, Father. Abba is a, it's like saying daddy. It's a very intimate type. I'm thankful that my grandchildren call me something besides grandfather. I mean, grandfather, technically that's what I am to my grandchildren, but I'm glad none of them call me grandfather. I knew a man that he wanted his grandchildren to call him grandfather. They didn't have a very good relationship. I want a good relationship. I want them to call me something that is very personal. All right? That's what this is. That's talking about that close bondage. I've received the adoption of sons. And it says here that we are able now to cry, Abba, Father. Papa, Daddy, whatever it is that's that personal word that we use when we talk. Opa, whatever it is, that's the personal connection that's very important to us. He says, wherefore, thou art no more a servant, but a son. And if a son, then an heir of God through Christ. How be it then? Well, I'll stop there. An heir of God through Christ. So the whole thing is now we are getting an understanding that we're to be an heir of something that's more than just having the understanding that I'm supposed to listen to what my teachers tell me. That's what we were when we were children. That's what the Jewish people were under the old law. That when you were out there in this old world and the enemy was jerking you around with all kinds of vices and temptations and bondage that's out there in the world, accusations and all of those things, then you were under that bondage. But you can receive an adoption that'll make you a son, a child of God that sets you free from those things. And you can have an inheritance that you can anticipate. When I read through this, the first thing that came to my mind was the 8th chapter of Romans. So I want to turn over there briefly. The Romans is attributed to the Apostle Paul as well, so it's no wonder why some of the language would sound the same. But we notice in verse 12 of the 8th chapter, he said, "Therefore, brethren, we are debtors not to the flesh to live after the flesh. We're not obligated to be in bondage." I want y'all to remember that. This is part of the overall picture of being a Christian. We're not obligated to be in bondage. It says, "For if you live after the flesh, you shall die." If you live in a state of bondage, you're going to die as one that was in bondage. "But if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live. For as many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God." So here he's introducing this sonship thought here, or concept. He says, "For ye have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but ye have not received the spirit, but ye have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry," there's that word again, "Abba, Father." It's a personal relationship. You'll hear me say that quite often, that we must have a personal relationship with God. And this Abba, Father is attributed to that. We are to have not a spirit of bondage, but a spirit of inheritance, of acceptance, of adoption. Christianity is not a cult. Christianity is a new person. That's what the scripture teaches. If we're born again, we're a new creature in Christ Jesus. Now we are an heir of righteousness, and we can become a child, a son of God. It's not gender specific here. It's for all of us. We can become a child of God. We can expect to inherit eternal life with Christ. He says, goes on to say, "The Spirit itself beareth witness with our spirit that we are the children of God, not a servant, but a child." He says, "And if children, then heirs of God, heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ, if so be that we suffer with him, that we may be also glorified together." Now here's the thing that I want us to get a hold of right here. Christianity is a transition from bondage to the elements of the world, to equality with Christ as far as inheritance is concerned. We don't become like Christ in that we're divine. Christ was divine, is divine. But we are on an equal level of being able to expect an inheritance that lasts through eternity. That's what it means to be a son of God. That's what it means to be a joint heir with Christ. So, this we're looking down over the whole picture of being a Christian. You're going to be an heir, a joint heir with Jesus Christ. Back in Galatians, in the 4th chapter, we'll read now the 8th verse beginning through the 11th verse. "Howbeit then, when you knew not God, you did service unto them by nature, which by nature are no gods." Do we all recognize that? That before we became a Christian, and if you're not truly a Christian today, do you recognize that something is dictating to you? You recognize that? Maybe if you're not really sold out as a Christian, you don't recognize that yet. Maybe you think you're doing your own thing. But I want to caution you, if you think you're doing your own thing, you're in bondage to something. He says here, howbeit then, when you knew not God, you did service unto them which by nature are no gods. But now, after that ye have known God, or rather are known of God, how turn you again to the weak and beggarly elements whereunto you desire again to be in bondage? Why is it that anyone would turn back from being an heir to going back to being in bondage? And that's what he's asking. Why is it that you've turned back? Why is it that you've slipped back into something that you were delivered from? He says, ye observe days and months and times and years. I'm afraid of you. I'm concerned about you, lest I have bestowed upon you labor in vain. Paul was a man just like we are. And he said, I'm really worried. It looks like my efforts to help you get on track and understand what it means to be an heir of God has just, it's not working. It's of no use. It's been discarded, and I feel like maybe my efforts was in vain. How is it that you could turn back to worshiping things that's not God? It could be superstition. You superstitious today? Could be fears. Could be luck. It's not that I don't ever use the word luck, but I want to be real careful about using that. Because I don't believe life is run on luck. I don't. Neither do I believe life should be run on fear. I'm a joint heir with Christ. God allows things to come my way. The scripture says he allows the rain to come on the just and on the unjust. There's going to be disappointments, even though I'm a Christian. But I'm not going to succumb to being afraid of black cats, cracks in the sidewalk, somebody handing me back an open pocket knife. I'm just not going to fall for that. I don't believe that's going to impact my future. It's because I'm not in subjection to that anymore. I'm not in bondage to that. You can get all the black cats you want to and run them across the road in front of me, and I'm not afraid. Now, if it's a really, really big black cat, I might be afraid. You know, like one that weighs a couple hundred pounds or something like that. I might be afraid of that. But 100 black house cats, I'm not afraid. I don't believe there's bad luck coming to me. I don't believe stepping on a crack is going to do anything either. Because I'm not in bondage to that. Why is it, he says, that you fell back into those kind of things? Why is it that you feel like, you know, there's people out there that try to profess Christianity, and yet their prayers have to have a certain ritual. I mean, if you're upside down, hanging, and you can't get loose, and something's got you by the leg, pray. You don't have to be face down facing the east to pray. That's bondage. I'm telling you, if something's got me by the leg and I'm hanging down in a hole and it looks like I'm fixing to fall, I'm going to say, Lord, have mercy on me. And I believe God hears me. I believe that's part of being a Christian. I believe we're free from, you know, I had a man come to our place of business, and I would have intercepted it if I would have realized somebody else told me this, and I walked by and seen it was coming to an end. But he got out of his truck in the shop, in the building, and he rolled out a little mat on the concrete, and he, I don't know if he had a GPS or what, but he lined it up just right, and he got down on his knees, and he put his face down on the ground, had his hands out like this, and he was saying his prayers. It was by the clock. He got in the right position. I'm going to tell you, that's bondage. It's not Christian either. He says, how is it that after you got a taste and you had been adopted, that you slip back into it? Well, I believe the reason people slip out of knowing and having the confidence that they've been adopted and they're a child of God is from all of the side pressure that's around us. You hand somebody your, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to belabor the point, but you hand your pocket knife to somebody, open it up for somebody, and, oh, here, let me close that back up before I give it back, or don't, or whatever it is. They got to do it just right. Oh, be careful, there's a black cat. We'll go all the way around the section before we go down that road. You know, all of this type of thing is, it's all around us. You know why these Galatians, you know why they were slipping back? These were probably Jewish people that lived in that region, that who he was writing to specifically. You know why they were slipping back into the Judaism, the practices that Judaism practiced back then? Why they were slipping back and being impacted? Because they lived around people that were idolatrous and were Judaizers. That's why they did. And it's around us all the time. Last Sunday we talked about calling evil good and good evil. And we have people all around us telling them, no, you're wrong and we're right. We need to be equitable and all of this kind of stuff. We're just pounded with that stuff all of the time. And it's easy to fall into this thing of slipping out of knowing that, no, I'm an heir. I don't have to succumb to that. I'm an heir to eternal life. Let's go down to the 16th verse. We'll come back to those verses we're skipping maybe later. The 16th verse says, am I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth? I don't know if anything I've said at this point has caused you to raise an eyebrow or say, well, I don't know if I believe that or not. But Paul says, am I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth? The Lord wants, he came to set us free from the bondage of the elements of this world, thinking that you have to do certain rituals or that you have to succumb to the pressures of society around us. He came to set us free from that. He came to set us free from those habits that somebody else might say, well, you're in bondage. You got to have this every so many minutes or so many hours or whatever, or you can't cope with life. I know people that have to have certain products and certain things that just on a regular basis. The Lord came to set us free from that. That's what Christianity is about. I can be a whole person with the help of God and not have crutches. I had a man come to me one time, or I came to him. We were praying together and counseling together, or I was counseling him, and he let me know that he drank a little bit. I was a little surprised that he said that. But before we got done, I told him, I said, don't allow that to be a crutch He was using it as a crutch. He said everything goes a little better if I had just a little bit of alcohol in him. He found that he was nicer to his family. Well, I don't know. I don't know what it's like to use that crutch, but I'm going to tell you it's a crutch. The Lord is able to make you whole without that. And you don't have to fall under that bondage. There's other things out there that we could be in bondage to. Not just the bondage of rituals and not just the bondage of social pressures of thinking and all that, but we can be in bondage to substance of various kinds that's available to us today, legally. He says, am I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth? They zealously affect you, but not well. Yea, they would exclude you that ye might affect them. But it is good to be zealously affected always in a good thing, and not only when I am present with you. So, verse 17, they zealously affect you, but not well. What do you think he's saying? There's a lot of enthusiasm about doing things that are not conducive to Christian behavior. Would you agree with that in our world today? There is a lot of enthusiasm in our world today. You know, be careful. We passed legislation in our state for legalizing a substance that's been illegal all my life. And it was like scattering seed. All of a sudden, there's places popping up all over the place where you can buy this stuff. I mean, it's coming up like weeds. It is weed. That's what we call it. And people have a lot of zeal about that. They do. There's a lot of enthusiasm. It says, they zealously affect you, but not well. You know, the world around us is going to have an impact on us. And we're going to have, as Christians, this is a big picture thing, we're going to have some strength about us to resist the enthusiasm of the world to call evil good and good evil. We're going to have to be able to have some stamina and say, no, I'm sorry, I don't do that. I don't need that crutch because I have Christ. I got something better than that. You know, let me tell you a little story. I'm an heir of eternal life. I'm not going to get into bondage or something like that that's going to rob this from me. He goes on to say, it's good to be zealously affected always in a good thing. It's good to have some enthusiasm about the right stuff. It's good to be on the offensive side rather than just on the defensive side. It's good to be able to say, no, I can't do that. They won't let me do that where I go to church. That's defense. Offensive is, no, I'm free. I don't have to do that. I can be a whole person without it. I don't have to do those things that's degrading to morality to prove that I'm a man or a woman. I can live higher than that. I can be... I can be strong and I can be zealously affected and I can affect others. I can't remember the exact situation, but it was someone else besides me. Somebody was trying to influence one of God's children, and I don't even remember how it was said now, but their response was, don't you know that's wrong? Well, it's kind of hard to, that puts somebody else on the defense. They're trying to justify something. We need to be zealously affecting the world for right things instead of always trying to find, well, how am I going to defend myself for this? I don't know. We can be all worried and wrought up when really maybe all we need to say is, well, everybody knows that's wrong. Or God wouldn't be pleased with us like that. You don't have to include the preacher's name at all. Oh, you can if you want to, but I feel like that's more defense. You can say, I'm an heir of the king. The king don't want me to do that. All right? He says, my little children, of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you. There's a lot of effort in this verse. I've witnessed that. My children came into this world, I was there every minute of it. My little children, of whom I travail in birth again, says, I desire to be present with you now and to change my voice, for I stand in doubt of you. He's worried. Tell me, ye that desire to be under the law, do you not hear the law? Maybe we'll stop right here. Do you really want what you used to have? Is that what you really want? Ye that desire to be under the law. He's talking to people that knew the old law system. But I want to broaden it out to include just sin in general. Is that really what you want? Tell me. Do you want to be in bondage to the entertainments of the world? Do you want to be in bondage to the substances that's out there in the world? The trends, the fads, the fashions, the pressures from society to accept things that's not acceptable in God's sight? Is that what you want? Paul's asking the question here. Tell me, ye that desire to be under the law, do you not hear the law? You know what it leads to? Or do you want something different? Where did we start? We started out talking about an heir, being an heir, and how the gospel is a... We read the rest of this eventually. We'll find out there are some things that's used for illustrations. A child becoming an adult, being more aware, realizing they're an heir and not just a servant. Realizing that we can be a joint heir, not with just a particular family name, but we can be a joint heir with Christ. And we can become adopted by God. We can be a child of God. And yet, a Christianity, the illustration is used that we become part of the bride of Christ. Collectively, we make the bride of Christ. And that's where this chapter is going to lead us into. And the bride of Christ produces children. And that's why he says, Paul said in the 19th verse, my little children, of whom I travail in birth again. What's he trying to do? He's trying to get somebody established. You know, that's what our purpose is as a church, as a congregation, is to help those that waffle, those that are weak, those that are not got their mind made up, travail in birth with them. We want them to be adopted, a child of God. We want them to be free from the bondage of the elements of this world, from some kind of ritual that they feel like they have to do. You know, there are people out there that pray and then they touch, you know, they do this thing. That's a bondage too. I'm telling you, you can pray in a crowded room. You can pray silently to the Lord. And you can cry out when you're in the most inconvenient situation. And I believe the Lord hears all of that. He's looking for the sincere prayer of the heart. The sincere prayer from your mind and your understanding. He wants you to be His child. He wants for you to be an heir. He wants you to be able to enjoy the blessings of eternity, through eternity. He wants you to be with Him in heaven. I want you to, too. I want us to be able to help those, as collectively now, I'd like for us to be able to help those that are struggling, that's trying to get their feet on the ground. heard a brother, Kenny Elwell, tell a story. We was over there, I believe it was at the Saturday night service at the hayride, that he's telling a story of how he went swimming out in the ocean, and he got caught with a undercurrent and he got pulled out. He told us he wasn't a very good swimmer, but he got pulled out to where he realized maybe he tried to touch bottom and there was no bottom, not for him anyway. And he swam and swam just as hard. He was asking God to help. It was one of those situations. It wouldn't done any good if he felt like God only heard prayers when he done the four, you know, touched himself on the forehead and all this stuff. Or it wouldn't have done any good if he felt like God only heard prayers if he rolled out a mat. He's in trouble. And he cried out to God to help him, and he swam like he'd never swam before, and he swam till he just about couldn't give out. And when he went to stood up, his water was only about waist deep or knee deep, and he was able to get out on shore. You know, may the Lord help us to help others be zealously affected in a good way, to be established, to get the feet on the ground, to be able to rise above the beggarly elements of the world. That's what Christianity is all about. That's part of the big picture. The Lord wants to lift us up and elevate us to the point that we can be a joint heir with Jesus Christ. You pray for me.